Welcome, friends, to the Enduring Gifts of Marvin Gaye podcast, brought to you by your 26-year listening veteran, Jessica. Join me as we celebrate these enduring gifts, the songs of Marvin Gaye. In each episode, I will share insights about the music and recount life experiences tied to it. I'm hoping to inspire you to take a first or your 500th first listen to these songs that are truly the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye.
Okay, so still on the album I Want You, and I think that this episode may finish up the album for me. I think it probably will. I listened to the whole thing last night as I was going to sleep. It was the first time I've done that in a really long time because I just wanted to listen to the album from start to finish. And that was really always the way that I kind of experienced that album. I will say that album has definitely usually been a start to finish experience for me. That, you know, it's like if I listen to it, I don't usually just put on one song and then I'm good. You know, like I need the time of the album. And when I was very first listening to this album, late 15, 16, I was seeing the story to it. And so it was so cool. Last night when I was listening to it, it was like the first time and probably literally, like I told you, coming across these stories about 20 years plus that I was just kind of going back exactly to the setting, the scene that I would just always write this story to. Like this was an ongoing, it was a set story. The storyline never changed and I was just writing it out. So it was like this movie that I could just pause and press play and, you know, just kind of go back to over and over again. And last night I went back to that setting, that scenery, and just listening to the album was letting the story play for me again. So kind of how I just say this episode right here is probably going to finish out the album for me. It's because I've said this, the album is a cohesive story from start to finish. And, you know, just to go song by song is not really telling the whole story for me, right? So, yeah, just the sickness of the instrumentation, definitely, in Come Live With Me, Angel. It's just the bass playing, you know, if they talk about the bass playing on What's Going On, right? Just the Funk Brothers. And I did see that they have credits on this album. I don't think it's James Jamerson is doing the bass, like was doing it on What's Going On, but it was still members of the Funk Brothers were doing it. I mean, it's just a very sick instrumentated, and I know that's not a word, song or album, but definitely Come Live With Me, Angel. And so like as much as anything that makes that song so sexy is just Marvin's flow to the beat, right? I mean, Marvin's flow to the beat is just very sick. It's just ill, right? And yeah, it's just the beats are sick. Marvin's flow to it is sick. It's very overlapping. It's very lush. And it's just very descriptive. Because, you know, I completely didn't touch on the lyrics, but I do want to point this out. Another element of what I just love about that song, Come Live With Me, Angel, is that he is literally, though, like, let's talk about the content of the song via the lyrics. Marvin is legitimately talking to this girl about coming to live with him. You know what I'm saying? And then, like, the way that he's bringing that down to her, I'll be like, all I need is a toothbrush. Do you know what I'm saying? Because he is telling her, and these are, like, two things that I would be needing if I was going to live with some man. I will understand your moods, and when you need your solitude, you can have it. Be like, okay, and you're Marvin Gaye too? Yes, please. Let's do all of this. And then three times a day too? Oh, okay. So, you know, it's like the song, the title of the song is completely what the message, the lyrics of the song are talking about. It works. It works very, very, very well. There's two really beautiful instrumentals on this album. And this is what I love about a Marvin Gaye project. And then 20 years later, what more there can be from the bit that you received. So who would have ever thought that from these two little, and it is literally called the intro jam that is on this album, that are these amazing, excellent little segues between the chapters of the story, right? Because each song is a different chapter of the story. You know, it could be months has gone by in the lives of these characters between the songs, but it's just the continuous story of this story. And those intro jams are a great little way to just put some distance in between the chapters. But who would, and both of them, what is the song number 10, I believe, is the one that's the longer of the two. What we get the first intro jam is song 6, right? Hold on, I'm looking to see if I have any of the album paperwork here. I don't, not in that. But yeah, the first intro jam hits us at song 6, and it's a pretty short one. I think that one's only like 30 seconds-ish. And then we get it again, the intro jam again at song 10. So it's right before the, you know, conclusion of the album. But who would have ever thought that those were literally just giving us little teeny tiny snippets of a 4+ minute long song? That is that whole instrumental. Oh my God. There was absolutely no reason that it needed to be 20+ years after that album came out until we could get that whole entire instrumental. That's just, it's so beautiful. And that it's so much deeper tells the story of this album. Now I got my paperwork and stuff. Okay. So, yeah. And so I will put that up. That's going to be the song for today, is the I Want You instrumental. So, yeah, it's I Want You intro jam. They're not even... Oh, okay, here we go. So, the I Want You intro jam, the first time it hits, it's 20 seconds. And then when it hits at song 10, it's 1:41. But then when you get the entire... I think it's the I Want You jam. Oh, here we go. Now, actually, I have to listen to this. This was throwing me off. I was seeing this referenced two places. So, in the release from 2003 of the deluxe edition of I Want You, I was looking at disc 2 because I see I Want You jam 4:52. It says undubbed. But I was like, I don't think that's the one I'm thinking of. Where it is, it's on disc 1, I Want You instrumental 4:33. I'm sorry, I'm just reading the credits that I'm seeing on this one little, it's like the plastic, like a little, do you hear that? It's what the disc slid in and out of. It's like a little case for it. And there's some credits here. Yeah, it's not really giving me any more detailed information. Okay, but it just was giving me the track lengths. So here's where, let me go into my frustration that I was telling you guys about with the credit fuck ups here. So in this, there's a booklet in here, and it's, now I'm like on this very last page here. And so buried, and this is far back, and this is contradicting information from where it said it someplace else, but it says background vocals, Marvin Gaye, Leon Ware, Gwanda Hambrook, female size, and Lem Barney. And Lem Barney is that football player guy that was doing some of the background, like the party sounds on the song What's Going On. So it's like, excuse me, where am I hearing Lem Barney on I Want You? And I would really specifically like to know that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have time to be not knowing where I'm hearing him, because he is not a singer. You know what I mean? And so where did he make an appearance on this album? But, yeah, when I was listening to this whole thing again last night, I was just definitely being transported back into my mind's eye of, you know, just the locales and the setting of this story that was going on. This is very young love. Okay, no, I mean, I look at it like that. I was very young in love, young in going about love when this album basically, you know, was like the story of my life. And I was very young at that. I was just very young at love. I hadn't had a whole bunch of various love experiences underneath my belt. I haven't had that till right now. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm most comfortable with that. You know what I mean? Like, ugh. It's one of those things where it's, if it, that's all about your own personal view on it. But I just, to explain further, you know, I know I made a comment in one of these episodes on this album so far where I was like, I go about it hard and long and deep and encompassing. And that was in no way trying to brag about that or say that that's the way to go about it. In a lot of ways, those exact things that I were saying are the things that make it that I don't have or have not had, you know, the success that I've sought out of those situations. Because it's like when, you know, you don't have the right fit and match with somebody, then being all in it is not going to make it work. You know what I mean? So I think kind of more where I was at here, I would say in the past 2 months, definitely in the time that I've been doing this podcast, and from just, you know, the healing and just the consciousness that I have here and there spouted out to you guys that I've just, you know, more been trying to get at in my overall life in these past couple of years. It was just like, you know what, though? Here's kind of one thing that I just am kind of suspecting is going to be the story of me. Oh my gosh. You know, we kind of sometimes come into this life with some innate things, some ancestral things that are just kind of ingrained in us. It's just innately how we go about those things. So me and this love thing, the way that I explained that I go at it, there was not an ounce of holdback. That was completely vulnerably telling you guys how I go about my thing. But like I said, I fully know that's not necessarily been the healthiest thing for me or the best way to go about things. But here's like what I said, I just, as the older I'm getting, I just kind of think what may end up being the story of me is that that's just the way that I go about that category of life. You know what I mean? I just, sometimes I think that, you know, learning and consciousness and whatever, kind of at the end of the day, when you're just put into life and you're approached with the situation, right? Like just the next thing you know, a situation is just in front of you and you are just going to innately deal with that situation the way that you kind of innately deal with things. You know, I could be trying to be so aware and so conscious of myself, but at the end of the day, I innately am going to approach love in that way, you know? And it's like I said, it's not the healthiest thing. It's not for me, as definitely I am an independent woman, you know what I mean? But that is one way that I can just not want to be so independent, you know? And that's not, it's not the healthiest thing to not want to be independent with the wrong person, right? And that's like sometimes the risk and the gamble is diving in head first to not wanting to be independent. And then you're already in that realm with somebody, and then you kind of really come to find out, oops, this wasn't the right person for me to just be diving into all of just the way that I am in this situation, the way I get so excited and geeked up to be in this situation. And it's like, wait a minute, you know, a little bit more time has to be taken to just suss out who you are as a potential match for me, right? So it's that, it's like, damn, though, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to get to the point where I don't make that head first diving in first and then have to just come to see who somebody really is on the back. And you know what? At least having that awakening of myself and a knowledge of myself in that way is a really big part of that journey, because I don't even want to say a battle, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think pick and choose your battles. I mean, I think that I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable just kind of knowing, like, this ain't going away. This is what it is. This is what is up, but this is me. It's really not changing, and I don't even really want it to change, you know what I mean? It's like, I just understand that the right person has to be the key to that, the missing piece to that. You know what I mean? It's like, I can stay who I am. I just have to hold out for that right person. So kind of, I guess what that boils down to is that I haven't necessarily grown up in love either. You know what I mean? Like, that's a very starry-eyed, I don't want to become jaded. I don't want to become bitter, and then things are just chalked up to, oh, this type and that type. And, you know, I don't want to just be talking bad about the opposite sex and stuff like that. So that's where I kind of get that this album gives me young love, because I was thinking back on, like, how old could Marvin have been? That's what I was going to say. But how old was Marvin? You know, in 76, he was 37. And that's not really young in love, but I think possibly in Marvin's experience, it was kind of young in love for him. Just given, you know, I think it was possibly kind of, comparatively speaking, young in his relationship that he was in at the time, you know, and young in that type of a relationship, young in that type of love. I think that the relationship that he was in at the time that this project was happening in his life was very different than the relationship he had, you know, been in for a long time prior to that. And so I just think, like, not necessarily young in love, period, but young-ish, comparatively speaking, in the type of love that he was in this album. I think there's a type of love, you know what I mean, that is this album. And there's, I think there is something kind of a young mindset about it, right? Like, it is an encompassing love. It is an all-in love. It is a very vulnerable love. It's a very intense love. You know, I think some people's reactions to love experiences is they evolve in their love approach. They evolve in their love outlook, in what the context of their love relationships is going to look like. And so I think it is possible. But see, this has not been my experience, and I don't gather that it was Marvin's experience either. Which kind of can lead to complications, love, mind, coping complications, right? It's like some people possibly could have a love experience that this album is the complete soundtrack to, and then that possibly can't sustain. And so they move on in life and they evolve their approach to love. And so they can find themselves in a new situation that doesn't resemble this album in any way, shape, or form. They're going about love in a completely different way. It's not as young of an approach as this. And I think some people can do that. See, that's been my thing. It's like my approach to love hasn't changed. My approach to love, damn it, is still this album. It is still being the girl that was listening to this album before I had ever been in love. You know what I mean? It's like, I, no matter what I go through in air quotes love, you know what I mean? It's like, I am like refusing because it's just who I am. That's what I'm saying. It's not even so much people about a refusal as an, like I said, I think it's a little bit more of a sigh of a relief for me to just identify it, own it, know it, but just be very cautious and more of like hitting the pause button. You know what I mean? It's just like before I can't just dive. You know what I mean? I know I'm Mexicana and shit, but I'm not these cliff divers jumping off of the Mexican cliffs and shit. You know what I mean? Like, I can't just always want to be diving off of a cliff like that. So I'm definitely at that place. And I think it's just this cautiousness and more of an awareness that I know that has to accompany this young approach to love, is the only way that I'm going to be able to navigate it from here on out, you know, just for the rest of life. But yeah, it's like, I listened to this album and I listened to it last night. I'm 40. And there's just something, this album puts you in that place. This album puts you in the place of this album, right? This album puts you in the place of the story of this man and this woman, right? And just their struggles, having this very deep, passionate, intense love and navigating through life to make that somehow come together and work, you know, and in some type of a way. And that can be the thing. It's like, you can find that person where you got all of the certain elements going for it, that are tied to certain elements of this album. But just that, like the longevity of it, that can be eluding. And so, I don't know. I just think that there's something, young about not wanting to let go of the hope of that coming together. Because, like I said, I think relatively speaking, Marvin was young in this type of love relationship that he was personally experiencing in life. But at the same time and at the same token, 37 is not really that young anymore. You know what? You know, it's just not. You're a little bit, quite a bit more grown. You know what I mean? And I think for me, I can actually just look back on my own experience. I was 37 and I dove off of the cliff, you know, just like I had when I was like 21, exactly the same way. I'm telling you, there's a way that I go about love. There can just be some subjects, some categories in life where you just have this innate approach that is the way that you deal and approach these situations. And it's not even something that you think through, that you consciously map out and have a little plan for, you know what I mean? It's just coming from somewhere. And I think it, for me, I think it does come from my Mexican mother, ancestral woman, you know, place. Like my Mexican mother is a place. You know what I'm saying? She's just a place. And, you know, she's in me whether or not she raised me or not. You know what I mean? She's, there's just sometimes these things that are just innate in us. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's up to you if you're prepared to forfeit that or just learn how to navigate with that. And I'm at the place where I just have the best sigh of relief, just feeling like I need to be very conscious about how I navigate with that. I don't want to give that up. It's fun to have that pure young outlook towards this thing, right? Don't want to get to a place where it's not fun and you don't have optimism associated with it. So yeah, that I would just say, like, now, guys, what I'm talking about, these levels that I'm at, I'm still so completely talking about this album. I guess I'm just now, like, the overall experience of this album is just this young, passionate, intense approach to love. And it is. It's one of those things where you look at it and you would maybe suspect Marvin could have been quite a bit age-wise younger than he actually was as he was singing these songs to give it such the delivery that he did. But, you know, like I said, I think it's kind of, if you are actually having a love experience, you know, soundtracked to this album, it's kind of where you are in life when that hits you. For me, it was my first experience out of the gate. And I was very age-wise young with that. I think, or, you know, your experience in life could be that you actually get hit up with a totally different type of love experience from that first. And you go completely through that. And then you're hit up with a love experience like that. This album is the soundtrack to it. You know, intensity is just the adjective, the descriptor for it, right? Intensity, passionate, very deep, very consuming. But this, I would just be saying, it's like all of the themes in this album, like what this man's journey through this relationship and this album is giving me everything that I, like I said, I've been in search of. It just really was forming for me. The blueprint, you know, of what it is to build to, right? It's like, yeah, I want a guy who is really gonna say, like, if we're seeing each other after some time, right? Because maybe sometimes there does need to be some time, but if we're seeing each other after there's been some time, like, how important this thing is to him is that, since I've had you, I haven't had anybody else. It's like, damn, really? Oh, okay. You know, I mean, so yeah, just to personalize this for me, like I said, I'm late 15, 16, I'm listening to this song. So once I had gotten that first $100 and I got that little stereo system for my room, I think, like, one of my very first complete albums on disc was this album. And so that just started the 15, 16. And I didn't have a boyfriend. So this just started my framing for me, my concepts of what the relationship with a man encompasses. You know what I mean? It is about, he has his eyes only on for you and on you. Time can go by that you two have taken a break, but he ain't out there fucking anybody else. Are you kidding me? And then just the beauty of, soon I'll be loving you again. You know, I guess if there is just a gem in the catalog, oh, it's that song, right? There, it's just, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if you are hearing this and it is creating the framework of what you have, or it's setting expectations for you. Like, that's how young I was in love, right? Like, I was so young, I wasn't even in love yet. I hadn't even had love yet. And I was being exposed to this album. And this is talking about some young-minded love, right? And so it was just like, wow, okay, a man, that man, right? Not a man, but that man. He's gonna, like, understand your moods, right? And when you want some solitude, you can have that. And three times a day. And, you know, if some time goes by, you know, like for whatever reason, and then he's still like, you were just such that thing to him that like, that's what's up. There has not been anybody else. And then if you could see how much that he loved you, you would want to just trust him. Like he knows that he's just got to earn for your trust. And you know, it's just like, you're not being steered wrong, people. This whole entire project is not steering you wrong. But it's just very young minded, you know, and it just comes with that intensity and that, you know, there's just that youthful aspects to it. Hi friends, I have three products that I want to recommend to you that I use on a daily basis. They're in the categories of lip care, hair care, and of course Marvin Gaye. Lip care, I came across the line Sarah Happ. They are giving me the best moisturizing results for my lips. I'm using a daily lip scrub and I follow it up with their Lip Slip product. It is the highest quality, longest lasting lip moisturizer I've ever come across. For my hair care needs, I finally landed on getting consistent, high quality results without breaking the bank from the Shea Moisture product line. I love their products. Really, really amazing results all the time for my hair. And then of course, Marvin Gaye, gotta have him every day. So what I'm going to do is put links in the show notes to these products on Amazon.com. And here's the transparency. If you use my link, I'm gonna get a few pennies, but that's not gonna change my life. So if that's the case, I have to be giving you recommendations for products that I really do use and swear by. So look for links in the show notes that'll take you directly to these product pages. And let's just get back to the story. Thanks. Just as far as the beauty of the sound too, all the way around has just always, that has just kind of been my personal little gem. Wait, there's something that he says in there too. What is it? You're not wasting my time, right? Like, what I see is so hard to find, and you're not wasting my time. Yeah, it's like in this situation, this woman, like, let's put it like that. This woman, whoever she is in this situation, she has come across a guy that I think she just maybe needs to open up her eyes a little bit more to what the fuck is really to be sought after in this life. I mean, it's just like, y'all need to work it out. You know what I mean? Cause just, I'm not really understanding what the problems have to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the problem? But yeah, it's just, it's so refreshing. I think, I guess that has to be what it is. Like, this story is coming from, you know, an obstacled relationship, and it's coming from the man's perspective, being very candid to the woman, right? It's like, I think everything that we hear on this album is what that woman is hearing, right? It seems like the whole entire, every song is a song that he is singing to her, right? It's like those moments when they are together and, you know, they keep parting ways for whatever. It seems like this woman, right? She's the problem. And then whenever they come back together, it's just like how much Marvin has to say to her. And he's saying things to her correctly, right? And he's just saying the right things to her. But you just get the impression like that, the since I had you, that's like the game changer. That's the, this man is kind of setting himself apart from, and that's, it's, so then for me too, you know, like I said, I was so young, I didn't even have love yet. This wasn't even young love for me yet. This was young pre-love for me. And so it did. It just set that expectation of like, wow, so you can have this intense thing with this guy, right? And like, for whatever reason, it may need to just take a little bit of a break, but he can actually see you again after that. And you just don't get the impression that Marvin is just lying to her. So it sets this expectation and this framework and this blueprint in my mind, this concept of, wow, this guy like actually can really care enough about her and like really want this situation like legitimately with her, that he's kind of like honoring that in times when they may not just be able to be together. Like, that is crucial and key. Like, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. That's what sets this man apart here. Right. I'm talking about the technique of this thing. And so what, we get 9 times that Marvin's hitting us with that thing. He hits us with that thing every single time. Like I say, that All the Way Round song is just so gorgeous. It's so Caribbean. It's so the island flair. Like I'm always on an island whenever that the beginning of that song starts. It's just so gorgeous. But the message of that too, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's not trying to play with this girl. Don't you just understand that from this whole album? Marvin is not trying to play with her. And I mean, like, obviously he said that from song number 1, but it's just like cut after cut after cut here. The way that he's coming at her, he is not trying to play with her. He's not considering her a plaything. She's not something that is disposable. She's something that, you know, stays on his mind. And like, if she could just see how much that he loved her, she'd want to trust him. It's like, oh my God. And this bitch just keeps leaving Marvin hanging like song after song after song. I'm sorry. I did just call her a bitch because it's like, what the fuck is this chick's problem in this album, dude? Like, Marvin must have already fucked up somehow, right? Because I think maybe he's had time and he's gotten himself together. Like, I think we kind of have to give some type of credit to this chick, because like, otherwise, what the fuck, for real? It's like, sometimes, bitch, you need to get your life together and understand, like, again, what I said, the things in life that should be sought after. Yeah. And you just have to think she's got to be worth it for Marvin to, you know, be just going 11 songs in on this. But yeah, it's just the beauty, I will say. So this whole entire album for just 20 years, you know, and then when this deluxe version of it came, and I will say, I just kind of feel like you've had however many years, you know, on just these 11 songs. And I would say that like the thing that is just the epitome of it, it is just the epitome of this project, is that I Want You instrumental, 4 minutes and 33 seconds long. That's what I'm saying. Like, who would have thought that when you got done listening to song 6 after 20 seconds, that perfect flow into All the Way Round, that there was more context to that 20 seconds, that it isn't just an intro jam. They do it injustice by calling it just an intro jam, when it expands quite a bit between track 9 and 11, you get 1 minute and 41 of it. Yeah, it's just kind of recapping everything. I think it just puts you in your mind's eye and you're just kind of quietly, silently, no lyrically, you know, just understanding the story, right? Like where you are on track 10 from the opening notes of the first song. But who would have thought that the context of that song itself actually is 4 minutes and 33 seconds? And it's like, wow, how do you make the decision to cut it at 1 and 41? You know what I'm saying? Like, how did you arbitrate that you were only giving us 1 minute and 41 seconds of this because that, I will say, that is the thing that destroyed my mind when I got to this track in the disc. And I do believe that by getting to this one, somehow I didn't read this whole book first, right? Because you know, I knew this project, like I said, for however many years, by the time I got the deluxe, right? So I just put it in. I didn't really feel like, and definitely too, it's the fact that they put this on disc one, which disc one is titled the original LP. So I didn't think I was going to be hearing anything new. And so then, you know, we finish with After the Dance. It goes into this I Want You vocal. It's a promo only version. I'm not really feeling that. It's very stripped down. It's very bare bones. And you can tell it's like very draft wise. So I sit there and I listened to it that first time, but then I was just like, oh, okay. And then when the I Want You instrumental came on and starts to play, I'm sitting there. It's nothing new to me, right? I've heard this for however many years now. And I'm like, literally, people, you listen to that and you get to minute 141. And you've known every single note that you've been hearing, and your mind is destroyed when 142 flows through, and then you're listening to that shit until 4 minutes and 33 seconds. And the depth of that song, the breadth of that song, it is so gorgeous. That is probably the most gorgeous instrumental of Marvin's, and as I think I shouted that out and I figured that out. I read that somewhere in the previous episode. Marvin does write on the, he wrote on the After the Dance instrumental. And I didn't previously tell you that. I tried to tell you to figure out which ones he wrote on, right? But he wrote on the After the Dance instrumental. Oh, okay. But hold on. Come on. I thought it told me. Okay, yes. No. Hold on one second. Ah! Yeah, okay. I thought that he also wrote on the I Want You intro jam, but it says that's written by Leon Ware and T-Boy Ross. But, you know, Marvin gets the executive producer credit on this album, so I just really do feel that, you know, he's signing off. It can be, you know, by the time that he was at this stage in his career, it kind of can be, you know, I can think of it at my own career when the time that I had that coworker of mine that was suddenly available. And I'll tell you how she came up to me too one time. So we would go about putting together these packages before she was there, right? So it was all me doing it. And it could kind of be a little bit, I just knew it was going to be a trek to the finish line. Do you know what I'm saying? Because like I explained this, I put it all together. I put the package together from 20 different directions and, that all comes onto my plate. And so it's always a trek to the finish line. It's a from start to finish. And I'm just on track of every day getting it to, I like to be done, you know, end of the day before the day that it's due, just so that anything unforeseen has a potential to be, you know, taken care of before it's fucking with me being able to meet my deadline. And so, you know, but that just requires me having to have a lot of focus and being able to work through a lot of chatter and a lot of disorganization and a lot of needing to clean shit up and put it all together, right? So it's just a very encompassing thing for me to work like that. And so we had one of these projects coming up. And a lot of the time, too, what's going on is that when I'm needing to do that, I'm also needing to juggle like 4 or 5 other things that are in completely different purviews of my, you know what I mean? It's like, that's not the only thing that I do, right? So then I've got like 4 or 5 things in 4 or 5 totally different other areas that I'm also having to be working on at the same time. And so it was one of these times I was working on 4 or 5 other things in different areas. And in the back of my mind, I knew we had this other thing coming up that we needed to soon get a start on, but we had enough time. I didn't really need to start worrying about that yet. And so this girl came up to me one day and she was just like, she had her little pad and pen and she was like, yeah, somebody told me to come up and ask you about starting to work on that. And I was a little bit annoyed with her at first because I was like, oh, so they're just going to have you do it. You know, I didn't say this to her at all, of course, but I was just like, oh, you know, and I didn't really want to like have to
if that was going to be the case, that she was going to do it, you know, and like up to a certain point until I would just kind of need to look at everything still. Like I wasn't going to be totally written out of the process. But it was just like, with her just coming out of the blue and wanting to start talking to me about me needing to like offload all of this stuff onto her and download with her on like how to do so many different parts and pieces of the process. And I didn't know what her previous experience was with anything. It was a little bit frustrating, but this is the thing. And this can be about Marvin's career. Quickly, when I was having these conversations with her, I could see she had aptitude and, you know, I could talk to her and she was understanding what the fuck I was saying to her. And she had an ability and she had, you know, like a motivation toward it. You know what I'm saying? She wasn't just some young kid who, you know, didn't give a fuck. And I knew she was going to do like a half-ass job on it. Like I could tell she was going to do a good job on it. And so I just kind of think once I started to be able to work with her like that, it just became such a pleasure. You know what I mean? And that's what I think that this was the stage that it could have been in Marvin's career too. It's like, you can kind of just take your hands off of some things and you can know that you've got this person over here kind of handling that. And yes, before it goes out the door, you are going to look at it and you are going to sign off on it, okay? Like if you took your hands off of it and you let them go, and then when they were done and they were just needing to show it to you at that point, if it looks completely crazy, it's not going out like that. Like, oh, fuck, we got to fix this. And now we just have to fix it really quick. You know what I mean? But there is a relief, there's a pleasure, there's an enjoyability in the experience of work when you can partner with people that you kind of can take your hands off of every single element of the thing and it still comes together very well. And it just kind of, it frees you up, right? And so I really do believe that that was Marvin's kind of freedom in this project, is that he came at us on this project with that thing, okay? That voice and the technique with it, the things that he is doing with his voice on this entire album, every single song, like I just said, every single song is his conversation with this chick whenever he's happened to come across her again. You know what I mean? And just the way that he is, even, you know, soon I'll be loving you again. He's actually not even really having the opportunity to speak to her. She's left before he's woken up, right? And, but it's just like, that doesn't matter. It's like, yeah, okay, so now I was just back into the message again. But it's like, even when she's not there with him, he's still saying the right things, right? Like it's like, wow. So now even this motherfucker is letting you know that even when he's not in your sight, he's still got the right things on his mind. Damn, girl, you need to get your life together and get with this man. Like, girl, you need to go get your man. You know what I'm saying? Because he's your man. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing. It's like when your man is like that, that is your man. Damn, you know, don't throw that away if he's a good one. You know what I mean? Damn. And pretty much in this life, people, that's just kind of like what we're dealing with in this day and age. Just our previous conversation. It's like, I'm sorry, you get a man riding with you like this throughout this album, he is a good man. You know, I didn't even need to say if he is a good man. It's like a man presents himself to you. Song 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 on this album. That's your man, and you would be so lucky. You better get your man. Shoot. Yeah, I just, this album is every single thing for the key to love and life, dude. Definitely that first song, but this entire album, like I said, it's a story. It's a start to finish story. I do love the ending. I do love that happy ending. Let's see. And Marvin does write on that one. Where was I looking at? I keep like losing my paperwork here, but there's something that I've been looking at that tells me who writes on these songs. There we go. Okay, yes. After the Dance, written by Marvin Gaye, Leon Ware, and T-Boy Ross. But Marvin got to kind of step back. His credit on this is executive producer. And so, you know, it's one of those things where he was working with skilled enough of a team that he didn't have to write on every single song. You know, I think what I was reading, parts of what I was reading, was that he actually was looking forward to kind of relinquishing the track-by-track producing to Leon Ware. But this was the process that I did read through. So let me share this with you just to make this clear. It pretty much, it seemed like the process of how this thing got made. I was just reading. There was something in here where it was giving like the dates of each song. Yeah, let me just read you right here. Okay, so it's talking about the I Want You song. So it says the basic track was recorded for and with T-Boy Ross on February 25th, 1975. Overdubs are recorded February 22nd, background vocals. March 1st, various overdubs. March 3rd, Ross lead vocals. May 6th, horns. May 7th, strings. May 18th and 28th, new lead vocals. May 30th, drums overdubbed. June 20th, final lead, new strings and horns. Okay, all of that, that was through 1975, blah, da, 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 da. And then Marvin Gaye overdubs at his studio September 18th and 20th, lead and background vocals. September 21st, keyboards and vocal dubbins. And then October 2nd, final lead, strings and horns, 1975. So actually, people, you know what? The way that I was so pissed off in the previous episode, not knowing where the fuck Marvin is singing and not singing and blah, da, fucking blah, you know? It's, I think what I'm seeing that the process was here is, like I told you, this whole thing was Leon Ware's project. And then he got the call to hook up with T-Boy Ross, and then they were working on it, and it was with the hope of that being released as T-Boy Ross's project. And so I think that's where we see, you know, that Ross is on lead vocals, or that background vocals are recorded, and it's possibly Leon Ware and it's other people. But then every place that I was reading through this, there's always like all that previous work that's going on. But then it hits Marvin, and Marvin's doing his overdubs, and he's working in his own studio. And let me point this out. I will say this is some research that I came across. So legendarily, right, like by this point in Marvin's career, what he's being able to work in is his own built studio, his own music recording studio. On Sunset Boulevard in LA, right? Like, it was just party central, right? I don't know. You know, I don't even want to say that, but that's what I've heard. And so I don't know, like, how true that is or whatever, right? We get into all these hyped up legendary stories, myths and shit. And so, but yeah, I have the studio, had a little apartment upstairs, and that allowed just to really be in your artistic space, right? Like, and when you think about that contrast to having to go into the little Motown Detroit Studio A, I hope you've seen that documentary on Showtime by now, just kind of like how tight those headquarters are. Dude, this is the thing I will say, like, so there's like zoning requirements and shit. And when they're showing that house that they bought, which was the Detroit headquarters for Motown for forever, this was literally a house on a block of houses. And I'm just like, really? Like, that was allowed? Like, they were allowed to buy a house and turn it completely into like a little business like that, where there was just music being made in it? Like, did the neighbors, they were obviously cool, but if they weren't cool, I think there maybe could have been a problem with that. But when you just kind of think about like that very tight, and it really was just like this little assembly line feeling location to just go in and record, and you got to get your recordings in, you got to hit your recording session, you got to do that, compared to, oh, now you get to have your totally very own studio. It's got its own living quarters there for you, right? Like, that is so much more conducive to your artistic space. It doesn't feel like you're going and clocking in and, you know, punching in and punching out just to go
get your vocals in.
So, yeah, I just think that Marvin was, you know, really more at ease at this phase in his recording career. But yeah, this place that he was working, that was his very own studio that he had built. That was something that he just got more and more senior in his career and what he was negotiating for himself. You know what I mean? I'm going to shout out my man, Cary Grant, really quick like that too, though. It's like when you think back to, and maybe you don't even know, but like back in those early 30s, 40s years of making movies, those studios had people under contract, right? And so they were locked into a studio and they were kind of locked into the projects that they would be parsed off. Just kind of exactly the same experience that Marvin had in his early career. But, and so Cary started out like that. He was under a short contract. That contract ran out. And then he did something that was basically unheard of for any of his peers in that whole entire time frame of making movies. Like, immediately after his first contract ran out, he just became his own free agent. And he made movies wherever the fuck he wanted to make movies. You know what I mean? Like, he worked with whatever studio he wanted to work with whatever director, producers, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't locked in to one studio and only being assigned certain projects, certain movie roles. Like, and because of that too, like, further that he got into his career, he was negotiating to get money on the, you know, the back end of the take from how much the movie made in theaters and shit. You know what I mean? So like, he was just always a sick businessman the way he handled his career. And it just, by this point in Marvin's career too, like, he was like, I'm sorry, I need my own recording studio. Hooked it up for himself, you know? So, kind of the legendary thing about that, like, I guess the studio still exists. I was reading kind of like its history. At a certain point, you know, in Marvin's career, it got foreclosed on and kind of was a part of all of his obligations that he just owed for taxes and stuff. So it kind of got kind of lumped into that. And then it was bought by somebody else and bought by somebody else. You know, it just kind of kept passing hands. But I guess it's in operation right now. And it goes under the title Marvin's Room. And they were just explaining, like, quite a few of the acts of current day that have recorded in there. Like, some really legendary people that record music nowadays, you know, they'll go and record in Marvin's Room. So I think that's pretty fucking cool. Yeah, I'm trying to think, guys. I didn't really spend like a whole lot of time on individual songs, you know, after, but it really just for me is that this entire album is just such a cohesive, beautiful, cohesive package. I've not spent most of my time listening to this project without listening to the entire project. I don't have a favorite Marvin Gaye song. I call that sacrilege. I wouldn't even try and go there. I just can't do it. Oh, I can't do it. But I would say, I don't even want to rank, but okay. All the way around, Soon I'll Be Loving You. Those two are very hardcore favorites. You know, Come Live With Me, Angel is just, it's that. Nothing sexier than experience, okay? Feel All My Love Inside. I have always kind of felt a little certain of a way about that song, but then just whenever I am really deeply, just again, it goes back to when I was first listening to the song. When I'm just really in the mood and in a certain mindset, just going in on this album, that song comes on and it's the next thing I know it's ending, you know? It's again, you know, like I said, he's talking to her right all the time. You know what I mean? Like, he's just talking correctly to that woman all the time. It's all subjective. It's about how you get it in, you know what I mean? But he's talking correctly to her the whole time. And they just obviously, you know, they do their thing. So there's that song. I really do love I Want to Be Where You Are, simply for what I read as Jam's take on that song. I believe I read it in this deluxe edition take. I'm actually looking at it really quickly. But anyway, she just says that she really kind of felt blessed that he, you know, made that song. It's a short little 1 minute and 18 long take that's included in the album. There's a 6 minute long take of it in the sessions where I'm looking. I Wanna Be Where You Are After the Dance, 4 minutes. Thought there was another one. I Wanna Be Where You Are, 6 minutes and 7 seconds. Right, because Michael Jackson, was it just Michael Jackson or the Jackson 5, right? They had that song. And so this was Marvin's just kind of take on that song. And so what we get, and this is the beautiful part, right? It's so beautiful, is he just shouts to his children. And she just said, you know, like, that's a gift that their kids have been able to rely on. So that's the only thing that I get from that song. It's like, that's just Marvin's message to his babies. But yeah. Okay, so then let's go back though. I will say, I want to give you the experience of the album, right? Because I definitely spent a lot of time on the vinyl with this before being able to move over to disc on it. So you go through I Want to Be Where You Are. I feel like then you have to flip the record over. And so then side two starts with that little quick 20-second intro jam. And that was always, I do remember, like, with my needle placement, because I sometimes didn't even want to wait the 20 seconds to be able to get to all the way around. So I'd be placing the needle, just trying to figure out where. And I don't know, there were fancy record players, right? Like, I know some people have the experience, and I think ours had the ability to do this too, but it was like hit or miss. You could do, there was like some little setting you could put on your record vinyl player where it would just lift itself up and it would automatically move itself and then lower itself down to the start of each track. And supposedly you kind of can see the grooves where a next track starts on a record. The groove is a little deeper, so you can kind of, but where we didn't have like a light directly over our record player, and it was in this entertainment center, so it wasn't like a well-lit situation for me ever trying to figure out where I needed to place my needle. But I just always remember basically always trying to skip over this little 20-second intro jam on the beginning of side two, because I always just wanted to get straight into All the Way Around. It's just such a beautiful song. So pretty. So pretty. Since I Had You, I'm going to tell you, if that's what I'm saying, like, that's the place right here where this man is just setting himself apart from others. It's just seriously though, for what he's saying, right? Like, he's saying two things. He's saying stuff that you're always going to hear from some, you know what I mean? But then I just, like I said, I just feel like he's never lying to this chick in this project. And so when he's telling her, like, he ain't been with anybody else, we're like, damn, really? Damn, okay, like, you're in my head now a little bit with that. And then, Soon I'll Be Loving You Again, there is just something, it can be very standalone. It can be very, very standalone with that song. You know, it's that in this day and age, you come across singers, male singers, who fashion themselves right after Marvin. They just do. They would be wise to. You obviously have to be very careful with how far you go with that, but just when it, what I said about the fashion themselves after, there are things that I will hear in this day and age sometimes in a male vocal, and I'm like, oh, that's something from Soon I'll Be Loving You. Like, Marvin just really, is creating a template. That has been relied on.
heavily.
We're kind of just seeing it being built right in this song. That is a definite Marvin Gaye experience song. A very heavily, do you need a very specific sample dose helping serving of some Marvin Gaye experience, some Marvin Gaye late 70s strong up into his game, vocal sound of the entire song experience. Yeah, that's it right there. So I don't have a favorite, and I won't make a favorite, and I won't choose a favorite, but if there is just a really, there needs to be a late set. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I needed to guide you, you know, if this is curriculum and we need audible examples of things, it is for the This Is Not a Bitches and Hoes song. The man is speaking correctly. You know what I'm saying? It's like in every single thing. And this is what makes a Marvin Gaye song, right? Like, he's speaking very clearly to this woman, how he feels about her, the strength of how he feels about her, the strength of his desire for her. And he's telling her that in a very in taste. Isn't that the term I used a couple of episodes back? Like, he says things in taste to her. He says things in love to her. He's just speaking correctly to a woman. And then you just need to hear Marvin Gaye voice technique, that thing technique, where you're kind of not incapacitated, like with a shiver going down your spine too. Cause like technique of that thing is the whole entire Come Live With Me Angel experience, but that's, you're a little bit too incapacitated sometimes in that, to higher level. It gets as complete, on this level, Marvin Gaye experience. This song is not quite as direct as Come Live With Me Angel, but then again, it is almost even more direct. You know what I mean? But it's all in taste. I'm telling you, it's just that young love, dude. It's that young, hopeful, optimistic, passionate, encompassing, intense love, dude. And he's strongly feeling that for this woman at this point in time. And he's not even able to be saying this to her. She's not right there with him. But that's like what I'm saying. Like, that's even where it's like, damn, even when he ain't in her sight, she ain't got nothing to worry about with this man, dude. It's too much. It's too much. I would say, like, if you want an experience of Marvin Gaye where it's too much, it's Soon I'll Be Loving You Again. Okay. 3 minutes and 14 seconds. Yeah. There's that song. I mean, you know, damn, dude. Like, if, like I said, if we were doing curriculum and we were late 70s and there was this every single element that I've just given to you, Marvin Gaye, that captures what I'm talking about here for you, technique with the thing, what he's saying to you with that thing, which makes what he's saying to you like all the more received. But then, yeah, just absolutely, let's focus on the technique of the thing too. You know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, this is that song. So After the Dance is kind of limiting in that it's so of that era. And Marvin even went so specific that he saw this girl on the Soul Train. It's like, well, damn, Marvin, there's only a handful of kids at the time that were able to be dancing on the Soul Train. So, you know what I mean? You kind of took this a little bit out of being my able to be my fantasy because, you know, you made it so specific to the Soul Train. Saw her dancing on the Soul Train, you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, now am I supposed to understand, like, this whole time this chick is some dancer off of the Soul Train? You know what I mean? Because it's just like that. It's just a very, very specific line, to the song. Like, I just, I don't know. And I'm looking at it. Yeah. You were looking good on the Soul Train. When I first saw your smile, you were looking good on the Soul Train. I was like, could that part have not been on there? But oh my gosh, could you just imagine? Like, that's why, you know, it that had to have been so fucking cool at the time. You know, definitely made it relatable at that time. Yes, I'm just looking here at the credits. We got a lot of instrumentation here. You know, we got bass, drums, percussion, piano, and Fender Rhodes, conga and bongo, guitars, quite a few on the guitars, strings and horns. I thought that they were saying that Marvin was playing on, hold on, let me see if I can find this. Thought that they were saying that Marvin was on the After the Dance instrumental doing that. I don't know. Is that Fender Rhodes on that song? After the Dance instrumental. Written by Marvin Gaye and Leon Ware. There we go. March 5th, 1976, Marvin's synthesizer overdub used on released version recorded direct to two-track master at his studio. Okay, see, yeah, wow. Marvin was pretty skilled at playing that fucking, hold on, what did the fuck, because I gotta look at even what they called that thing again. Piano and Fender Rhodes. What the fuck is a Fender Rhode, dude? Like, I don't even know what that is. But what did they just say? It was this, he played the synthesizer. So he was doing that. You know, Marvin was a synthesizer. He played that instrument. Yeah. Okay. This is, you know, the I Want You album, 1976. It is kind of a little bit of a buffered place in Marvin's career. We don't really get a brand new album right after that. I think we do get an album in 77. It's his concert that he plays over in London. And they needed some B-side material to it. And so we get a track off of that. And then right before this, 75, he didn't have anything. 74, his project was his live concert, and he went out on tour. But that concert, you know what I'm saying, there wasn't a brand new song that was on that, except for Jan. I guess Jan was his brand new song on that album. So he had kind of been taking a break, and that was one of the gists of the reading that I got, you know, kind of how Barry was inserted into this process, is they were saying, you know, and this makes sense, and this fits into the story that we know of Marvin's career so far, but especially by this point in time when he's got a little bit more seniority and he's got a little bit more control. And so he's not in the studio 2 and 3 times a month getting, you know, tracks released and shit. They were always trying to get Marvin to work. That was the way that I read. They were always trying to get Marvin to work. And so that's kind of where Barry gets involved, and he's suggesting, like, hey, you know, send this Marvin's way. He hasn't recorded a brand new project since that duet album with Diana Ross. So, and I think that was in 74 as well. Maybe, actually, I think it was the end of 73. I think that came out after Let's Get It On and before that 1974 concert. So he's taking a little bit of time, you know? But that's kind of where his beginnings were. That made certain people uncomfortable, you know, like, ah, oh, we need products. So this was like, so all that I'm saying is, like, it was kind of a little bit of a buffered spot. It's not so closely like, oh, just, you know, months right before this, the previous project had been released. You know, he has taken a little bit of time. So, okay. Okay, so then if we're done with I Want You,
Geez, where do I go next? I'm going to have to kind of look at my little list, that little one list that I found in my files where I kind of circled things for myself. I think, you know what, I have a pretty sneaking suspicion, just as I'm thinking of this right now, the next album is Let's Get It On. Yeah, let's just do that. It'll be Let's Get It On next. All right, talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Well, friends, that's it for this episode. Did we have fun? I had fun. Subscribe to our show so you never miss the enduring gifts of Marvin Gaye. Follow us on Pinterest, pinterest.com/MarvinGaye_enduring_gifts. There, we are up to 45,000 views per month. I have thousands of images and videos of Marvin. Also, check out the YouTube channel, Marvin Gaye's Enduring Gifts. I'm building the Song of the Day playlist there. It's my ultimate goal to become your free online Marvin Gaye listening resource. So, as always, we really appreciate your listening support. Give us subscribes, give us likes, and thank you for listening.